Hey, and welcome to Tomorrow. I'm your host, Joshua Topolsky. Today on the podcast, we discuss construction workers, Troy Sivan, and Osama bin Laden. I don't want to waste 1 minute. Let's get right into it. All right, Ryan, we're back. It's another week. Nothing's happening. Very quiet. No deaths, no tweets, no political
situations. Come on, no debates, nothing.
No debates. Oh, yeah.
Louis C.K. didn't do anything this
Louis
week,
C.K.
which is great.
Is just continuing to lay low.
So good.
Let's talk about Louis C.K. for a second.
All right. Let's get into it.
So I didn't read the Times article, but apparently Louis C.K. did a secret surprise set.
Just showed up. He loves surprising
at
people.
At the Comedy Cellar. Wow. At the Comedy Cellar, right? Is that where it was?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done a set at the Comedy Cellar?
Comedy Cellar's not notoriously gay friendly.
Oh, really?
It's just not.
That's
it's one of
those places.
Those, you know, like
the
like Chuckle
Dane
Hut.
Cook, Dane,
those
Dane
kind
Cook.
Of places yeah. is not where I'm going to play.
It's like Dane
I've
Cook
been
does
there.
Workshops and material there.
But it's,
I don't know. I don't know anything about the comedy world except that I know that people get up there, they bare their souls, they make the audience laugh, and sometimes they go, you know what, it's not all right that I'm making fun of myself. We have to stop this. We have to stop making fun of ourselves. By the way, I have to say, I listened to, we did a World Dispatch episode about the Nanette piece that we ran, but that Peter Moskowitz wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't watched Nanette, but
you feel qualified.
But I listened to, but we have clips of the show on there and Hannah Gadsby is talking about how anger, it's like anger can only become like, it's only hate and it can only fuel like, you know, these sort of toxic feelings and, you know, and I, there's a PIL song, which is called, why am I blanking? It's called Rise, kind of a minor hit from the 80s, great PIL song, John Lydon. Who's now a whole horrible, horrible person, formerly Johnny Rotten. Anyhow,
a lot of people from the 80s.
A lot of people turned out bad. But anyhow, the end of the song, there's this refrain, which is anger is an energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, like, I was, like, thinking about the argument about Nanette and the pros and the cons of it. And I do think it's, like, it's always tough when you have, like, your ideology and you're like, this is my ideology. Now it should become your ideology. And I think that...
I think the thing with Nanette is that it's her truth.
Again.
And it's right for her, and it's her story, and she's saying it's probably right for lots of people who don't know that it's right for them yet. And so, listen, but it doesn't make it. It's one of those things. That's like, okay, but I'm a queer comic who's been sexually assaulted, and none of that applies to my work.
Personally,
so.
I haven't sexually assaulted, but I do have a gigantic Jewish hook nose, which I'm going to talk about whenever I want to whomever I want. Okay, so anyhow, Louis C.K. Getting back to Louis C.K., he did a set. And I don't know what the nature of the material was. Is there a write-up where it covers the material?
I thought it was just regular like
just regular stuff?
His regular stuff was just like dad stuff.
Okay.
He avoided the topic.
It wasn't like
it's the chair.
I know. He wasn't like – okay. I'll just pick it from here. He wasn't like I serially sexually assaulted – basically sexually harassed / assaulted. I don't know what you call it because, like, he didn't touch anybody, right?
Mm-mm.
His thing was he would masturbate in front of people and, like, not let them, like, leave the room.
Till he was done. And I had heard about that. I will tell you, say this. I'm not going to name a name.
Wow.
But I was at a party, an industry event, and Louis C.K. was there with other, like, big-name people. And it wasn't a huge party. It was a small cocktail party. And another comedian who's not as big but who is far more talented than him pulled me aside and said... I said, oh, do you want to meet Louis? Louis C.K. just walked in. And she pulled me aside and told me, and she was like, women in New York have been telling each other these stories. And she was like, and it happened to a friend of mine, and I was skeptical of the story. And it was the most menacing thing, because then from then on, she couldn't go alone places with comics, not just PTSD, but just for safety reasons, because once you know that the possibility is there.
Sure.
And I guess it's, like, better to – I don't know. It was so – So when it all came out, I knew about it. And,
well, right. And Gawker had written that story.
And to see people act as if like, but, you know, he talked to them and, you know, they were down for it. Or it's not that big of a deal to know the fear in someone's eyes who is a friend of someone that had happened to. Like, if it's real. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a real thing that really, he really harmed a whole bunch of people.
He obviously really did it, and it clearly had real psychological
and like
emotional...
he knew he was doing something bad because he kept it a secret, and Dave Becky blackballed these people.
Right. So
just repeated my own career by saying that.
So it's fine. You don't need that career. Anyhow, he does a set. I guess doesn't address the. To me, if I'm Louis C.K., let me put myself in the shoes of Louis C.K.
Sure.
All right, let me think for a second. I love to, and we talked about this when it happened, by the way. I'm just trying to think about the mentality, which is I love it when the other person is not enjoying themselves. That is the top line item.
How is that sexy?
The top line item is what turns me on is when another person feels uncomfortable and would like to leave. Ugh. I can't think of a thing that is actually less sexy.
I know that men have a thing, and it's more common with men than it is with women, to be like shamed or to, it's like cuck stuff. To like be like, you're inferior, you're nothing, and like squirm.
I mean, the man is the cuck.
Yeah, like being told like you're a little, like you have a tiny penis, you're gross, all that stuff. But like, I guess in a fantasy where like everybody's consenting and this is whatever, but the actual life stuff of that, like that doesn't haunt you that you do it over
over? You're saying you think Louis was like wanted the, well,
wanted to be called gross.
Oh, you think he wanted the women to be
yeah,
like,
look
that's
at
disgusting.
His material.
Why are you doing that? Yeah, okay.
His material's all self-hating. I'm sweaty and fat and gross.
So lame. Anyhow, so he's a serial masturbator,
he popped up to do a set.
So he does a set.
9 months.
Doesn't address it. And there's obviously heated debate. Jeremy Gordon, culture editor at The Outline, wrote a really smart piece about it, about him not deserving a second chance. And I'll say this, and I think it's a nuanced piece, and I think if you read it, I think there's a part of it that's kind of like, you kind of like, to get a second chance, it's not like you just, like, there will be a moment where the second chance appears for you. Like, in a situation like the one that Louis C.K. is in, I think I would imagine that reasonable people are like, there are paths back to, back into the public. Let's maybe not say good graces of the public, but, like, at least being able to, like, show your face.
Winona Ryder was banned for 10 years, and she went to therapy, and she did fucking talks, and donated money, and did volunteer work, and all of this stuff, because she shoplifted some sweater impulsively when she was in the throes of mental illness.
Yeah.
And...
but it's like, 9 months of just being quiet, and then like, hey, I'm back. It's like, I just feel like there's a much more rigorous process for what Louis has done that he needs to go through before I can even remotely consider wanting to hear anything he has to say. You know what I mean? It's like I by the way, I'm not that big of a Louis C.K. fan to begin with. But like, you know, he's
a fine comic.
Talented guy.
That isn't like, a talent that's so necessary that like he's an amazing surgeon.
But I'm not of the mind that he should be like banned for life from everything. But it's like in order to get back, it's like he has to do something really, really meaningful in the way of owning up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Real apologies.
On my Ryan show this weekend, I talked about someone else who apologized, which is a makeup artist who tweeted some racist stuff, and she did a really hollow fake apology, and everybody, there's a huge backlash, and you can go watch that.
Her name is
Laura Lee.
Laura Lee, yes.
But the crux of the thing ended up being, when you apologize, you have to know what you did wrong, feel like genuine empathy, and feel really bad. You have to take steps to show how you won't let this happen again. You have to do some work, like donate money, volunteer time, like actually do something to try to make it up to somebody. Genuinely apologize, ask for forgiveness, and expect none of it.
Yeah.
And what Louis needs to realize is that this is a workplace safety thing. Other female comics, other male comics don't necessarily want to be around him. And so for you to go to a stand-up show where other comics, women won't be able to get in the door or don't want to perform, you're taking time, you're taking safety from them. So if he turned around and said, I'm going to write a book because then I won't have to be around anyone, they won't have to be uncomfortable, I'll get my viewpoint out there, and blah, 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 after he really apologizes and in his book he discusses what he learned and how he's changing his life, I would be willing to read that book and engage with a conversation.
Or like, look, you want to perform? I mean, you want to like, you know, put yourself out there? Like,
book your own night. Sell tickets.
Or no. Or, like, make, like, let people see you go through some process where you're actually – something is actually changing. I mean, I'm not giving him a show idea
even,
or anything.
Even rhetorically.
But, like, but the reality is he didn't go to jail. Mm-mm. He wasn't sued. He hasn't paid anybody anything. Maybe he has. I don't know if he's paid people off or not. Like, but, like, that's that would only be the start of a road back to any kind of, like, I want to see or hear from Louis C.K. It's like there are a lot of people who we don't hear from that, frankly, like – you've eaten up a lot of time, and like until mm-hmm. you can establish yourself as not a fucking maniac and show that you've learned that like the way you were behaving is really crazy and bad, and like you should never do that, and you're gonna like make sure that other people don't do that, and you're gonna put time and effort and energy and fucking money into it. Like, you just have to do stuff, you know? Like, I don't understand how he isn't like, what is the thinking? Like, the thinking from him is, I'll wait it out.
Mm-hmm.
People kind of forget about it. The hardcore Louis fans don't give a shit to begin with. They're like, that's hilarious.
There's apologists for everybody.
Right. And then
there's Manson apologists.
And then he's going to get out there, back out there. And then he'll have, you know, maybe he lost 20% of his audience, but then he got a new 20% that's like MRA guys or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's the equation. And he's like, I don't care if like woke people won't accept me. This could be Louis thinking.
But I think that comedy clubs in New York need to defend their employees and protect their employees. If someone was masturbating in this office and scaring your female employees,
yes.
and 9 months later you were like, listen, he had his 9 months off. Yeah. He's a really good writer.
That's the...
Why don't we have him in the office?
When you put in that... I saw some people tweeting about this. And I mean, maybe it's meant Jeremy also mentioned something like this in his article, but it is very simple. Like, imagine this scenario, but he's like... you know, a manager at Starbucks.
Yeah.
And he's like jerking off in front of the female employees. Would you be like, okay, you're fired, but in 9 months you can come back and be the manager at the Starbucks? Like, nobody would be like, yeah.
And it's not just a Starbucks, because a comedy club owner, and I've worked in these clubs, owns a very dangerous venue that has tons of workplace safety issues. Audience members are wild cards, like you're at a theme park.
Yeah.
There is alcohol. You are dealing with mentally ill people for the most part that do this job.
Sure.
You're dealing with drugs. You're dealing with interpersonal relationships that are perfectly allowed because none of these people are under contract. It's an insane environment.
Yeah.
To throw a known sexual predator back in there and act like you are really being a responsible business owner is crazy.
Like, just to be clear, I don't think that – I will say this. I don't think that we should have – I mean, look, if you've committed the crime, you should be punished for that crime. You should go through the process.
There's a redemption process for everyone.
But let's just say, like, what Louis did is, like, in this weird gray area where it's, like, clearly very damaging and upsetting and scary – for lots of different reasons, but like it's like maybe you can't like prosecute that exactly. I mean, there's probably some type of crime that it is, but he's not going to jail, okay?
Yeah.
He's not going to pay a fine or whatever. I don't believe that he's like as a person is like beyond getting past this, like that we couldn't.
He's just doing it in the worst way.
I don't feel like, wow, I'll never be able to forgive Louis for being a fucking creep. Like, I'm like, you can kind of forgive almost anybody in the right circumstances with the right set of like the right amount of work from that person and belief.
Well, like back to the Manson thing. Some of those Manson girls later in life did a ton of work. They wrote books. They like had huge they got out of drugs and they got their mental illness treated, and they've done a ton of work on themselves. And maybe they'll never get out of prison. But in my mind, it's like you're not who the person that you were.
And you're
in a different place. And
this is not a murder.
But Charles Manson didn't do that. And this isn't also
a
murder.
The road back should be actually easier, but there has to be a road.
And you have to do...
You can't just airdrop into the destination. You're like, okay, let's just say you're over here, right? If you look at the map, you're like, here's your starting point. There's your ending point. Your ending point is like, Louis has paid, has understood, has learned, has paid the social, professional... personal fines that are required to
and the women who he victimized do not need to forgive him, but we can re-engage with him as a public entity.
I would think my art is talking about myself and what I'm going through and what's going on in my mind. So I would have at least imagined that if his first thing, like if he gets up on stage and wants to do comedy, he'd be like, I did something really horrible and really fucked up, and I'm trying to figure it out, and here's my thoughts about it. Like, he would at least, like, as comedians often do, like, try to work through their shit in that environment, but apparently he's just like doing jokes about like how crazy it is to be a dad. And it's like, you know, fuck off. Like basically fuck off. Like I do, you know, a person in normal life does like minor things. You still have to fucking apologize in a meaningful way. Like you offended somebody or you were rude or you interrupted
someone. We have all fucked up. I probably have said something in this podcast I regret. I will definitely say something on my fucking talk show where that will eventually, that if it stays going, I will say something horrible that I will ask forgiveness for because I'm a human being like you at home, like every single person. But
you're not gonna serially masturbate.
And I'm not gonna turn around if I did and be like, well, we're back from commercial.
Right, exactly.
Are
exactly.
My next two female guests that I'm forcing to do this?
Oh,
it'd be
God.
So fucked up.
It's dark. Anyhow, so Louis, yeah, I don't think.
Louis, go home.
Go get, just, or you don't have to go home. Start doing something that looks like a process
that you're
are
trying.
Actually like engaged in, where you recognize how fucked up what you were doing was, and that you're like, there's something that's like fundamentally wrong with you, and you need help, and
for the production of the women that you blackballed to make a project before you go make it your next project your millions of dollars.
That's an interesting angle. All right, anyhow, what else is going on?
All right, did you see the Cuomo Nixon debate?
So
I watched that shit live.
I didn't see the debate, but I read some stories about it. I was actually traveling. I think I was on a plane when the debate was going on, and. I understand it got pretty heated.
Yeah, there was a New Yorker piece by Masha Gessen where she talked about what politics is, which is really what the whole thing came down to. Cuomo was talking a lot about – he's basically running against Trump. Cynthia Nixon was running against Cuomo. Mm. And they both came from a place of like, why are you qualified or you've been doing management wrong, as opposed to saying what is this job actually? Because he said to Cynthia Nixon at one point or they asked Cynthia Nixon, why are you qualified to do this job? And she talked about her activism, her fundraising, she's done extremely commendable work for a long time in New York as an activist and fundraiser, and her involvement in politics. And what she really should have said is, I said, I don't need to know the specifics of how to finance the building of a bridge. I don't need to know the specifics of it's not my job to necessarily know how political bylaws of every single union in order to say I'm pro-union. Mm. My job is to inspire and to hire the right people and to know the right people who can give me that information and to help them work in a way that will that it's more of a job about holistically making the government work in a specific way, as opposed – and she should have said, Andrew Cuomo obviously isn't good at this. He obviously is a micromanager with pet projects who exploits every angle he can to get things done that isn't what you want. I will exploit every angle I can to get things done that is what you
want.
I mean,
you should be a campaign manager. Why are you sitting here?
But no, this is Masha Gessen's thesis from The New Yorker. And
oh,
that's really
I
when
okay.
I walked away from it. That was the impression I had, and Masha Gessen put it into words.
You don't think that Cynthia Nixon did a great job in the debate?
I think she did a very good job, but Cuomo's obviously a better debater. She obviously is correct on the facts, if we're being...
He's a career politician. I
mean, yes.
If he can't debate, he's got real
But
problems.
He came off like a huge bully, and I don't know how that sells in New York now.
Oh, I don't know. I mean...
Post-Trump, I don't know if that's
I don't know.
Palatable.
You know, the crazy thing about New York is that there's a bunch of people who voted for Trump. I mean, obviously not the majority, but
yeah,
there are people... I mean, I see fucking Trump bumper stickers all the time, and I'm like, I literally think about running cars off the road. I mean, of course I wouldn't do that.
He was saying stuff like the fact that she has a corporation that she runs her entertainment business through is a rich people thing. And I think that New Yorkers realize that, like, that's a silly attack against a famous actor. I have a corporation that I run my business through, and I just told you I have $0 to my name.
Also, Cuomo's definitely rich. I mean,
it's just a silly attack. Or he called her the corporate Democrat. Like, just weird attacks that just seemed unhinged. So I think she won, but I think
what was public opinion? Do we know?
I think it was kind of mixed.
On the one hand,
Governor Cuomo?
Governor Cuomo. Wait, what is his first name?
Andrew,
sorry. His father was Mario. Okay, let me start that over. We'll just edit that out. Andrew, right. There's all these Cuomos. Chris Cuomo. By the way, have you seen his show on CNN?
Oh, my
God. I have an amazing idea I'm going to tell you about after this.
Wait, I'm going to also show you a text later. Okay.
Okay, so Andrew Cuomo, I mean, he's like a career politician. His father was a politician. He seems kind of like a New York, like, you know, like a slumlord kind of. Like maybe he would like.
Yeah, he's a real shady.
He owns some apartments and he's doing horrible things to the tenants or whatever. You know,
he's a real Trump adjacent figure.
He's a kind of right. But he's a Democrat, apparently.
Oh. Well, who isn't?
On the other hand, Cynthia Nixon is you know, has not been a politician, has not been a governor, has not.
Sure, but he's a politician because his dad was.
Has not been on a city council, has not been, is not a lawyer as far as I know.
Miranda Hobbs was.
Okay, she played a lawyer, you know, and then you learn some stuff. I
don't think that job requires that.
I do think, okay, I'm going to.
She has lawyers.
I'm going to argue with you here a little bit. I do think the job requires like.
Obama was a community activist and fundraiser.
But he also was a senator.
Sure, but I mean, like, he became a senator. I'm not saying she should be president, but I think a governor.
Well, everybody starts somewhere. I mean, starting a governor is a pretty high role. I mean, sure. It's like, it's not like she was like, well, I've been on the city council.
But she's got comprehensive ideas.
I was the mayor of this, you know, whatever.
Listen, between her and Cuomo, I'm not saying she's a perfect candidate.
I'm not.
But between her and Cuomo.
I'm not. Well, look.
Are you voting for Cuomo?
First off, I haven't even thought about it. That's the first thing. Like, I kind of don't. Right now, I mean, Cuomo is. Not a great-looking candidate in many ways. Did you see this story about the
you've been on the subway?
The money about the money with the 25K or whatever with the Harvey Weinstein thing.
You let Harvey off?
Yeah, I mean that's
for 25K.
Like, it does not look good. Okay,
yikes. And someone was like, "Well, that law firm donates to him every year." It was like, "Okay, so they've been bribing him." Yeah,
But I also don't want to. You know, as much as I'm like, "Oh, Oprah should be you know, run for president or whatever." Mm. I think we do have to be wary about like. I mean, experience matters. I mean, also by the way, not having experience matters too. Like, I actually like the idea. In some ways, of somebody coming into a job and going like, okay, explain this to me.
And be like, that's crazy, I'm not doing that.
So you could be like, that's fucking nuts. Like, why would you do it like that? Like, you kind of do need sometimes to have, like, raw thinking that is not like, oh, I've done this my entire life, and my father did it, and my brother did it, whatever.
Because you're not used to
I can see an argument for it. I do think there's a certain set of skills that you need to kind of develop.
Mm-hmm.
And I my opinion is... you know, as long as the governor of New York remains a Democrat, which I don't think is going to be an issue. Maybe it will be, but I don't think it'll be a huge issue. You know, I'm going to be I don't know. I don't take the subway. I guess this is what I should tell everybody. Just like, I don't really take the subway. So a lot of people are like, you know, I understand she called it Cuomo's MTA or something.
Cuomo uses the MTA as an ATM, yeah. Which he does.
Oh,
if you vote for Andrew Cuomo,
I'm not voting for him.
When you die, you will spend eternity on a C train.
I'm not voting for Andrew Cuomo. All I'm saying is this: I think there are valid arguments for and against.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing I do agree on is that.
Do you think he's going to run for president?
Andrew Cuomo?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can run all he wants. He ain't going to fucking win. I mean, no one's going to elect Andrew Cuomo as president. No one wants, like, it's like Michael Avenatti talking about how he's going to become president. It's like, I don't want Michael. I already have a fucking, we don't need more
of this.
We don't need, like, more New Yorkers who are, like, tough, straight talking.
Hey, I got some bullshit to talk about the swamp.
Like, hey,
fuck that swamp.
Hey. It's like those guys. Like, I don't need like I don't need like construction.
No, my uncle doesn't need to be the president again.
Donald Trump is like. And by the way, I'm not shit talking construction workers because they actually build incredible things. But like the worst construction workers, the catcalling guys. That's like Donald Trump is like an elevated that guy. He's like now the president. I don't need that strain of. I'm not saying
those guys exist in every industry.
I mean, clearly Michael Avenatti is like more woke or whatever. But still, it's like. I don't need like guys who are like literal like
Basta.
literal like locker room guys. Like we don't need any more of those guys. Like I'm good. I want like a frail nerd who learned some things.
I want Elizabeth Warren
who's
to be
uncomfortable.
Like, actually, in section B of that bill.
Yeah, I want a frail nerd who's uncomfortable in the locker room to run things. That's what I'm interested in. But not an incel. Yeah. Not an incel and not an MRA guy.
Nobody with a Reddit.
It's tough, honestly. Let's just like maybe no man. So I'm gonna vote for Cynthia Nixon just on the basis that she's not a man, I think.
No man.
To be honest with you. Like I think fewer.
Well, people kept saying you're only voting for Cynthia because she's a woman. First off, maybe that's valid. P.S. Some people are only voting for Cuomo because he's a man.
I just think it's like I just think, honestly, at this point, like fewer men in politics, I think could be a good thing.
Yeah, kill all men.
I don't think we have to kill them, but
kill
we have
all
to
men.
Get them out of their seats. So all right. I went nowhere with that. All right, what else is going on?
All right. So for our last story, let's end with something happy.
Oh.
Eating carbs might save your life, a piece on The Outline by Casey Johnston.
You know, listen, there's been a lot of debate about the paleo, the Mediterranean diet, the...
you know, all those doctors that died from their own diets because they only ate red meat.
The all salami diet, which I'm on currently. I just eat, I just get a, I get
but
that.
It smells so good in here.
I get that. You know that thing of salami at the deli that you see at the deli counter? I get that and I just work my way through. I do half on Monday, half on Tuesday, then I get a new one for Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, I fast. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I only eat cake. So it's a pretty effective diet. I mean, my cholesterol is 500. Over 20. I don't know.
I'm out of breath talking on a podcast.
I don't actually know. I literally, what's like bad cholesterol level?
I found out my cholesterol was slightly high.
What is it?
I don't remember.
Okay, you don't want to tell me.
No, I don't remember, but it was very slightly high. So I started taking fiber supplements and it's changed the game.
Oh, really? Fiber?
Changed the game. Got rid of my heartburn, more energy.
Regularity
in all departments.
In the bowel area.
In all departments.
I gotta say, look,
I love it.
Let me get personal with the listener for a
second. Oh, no.
You know, there's nothing more, like, sort of grounding than to be regular. Let's be honest. No one likes to be constipated. No one likes to have a...
You want everything moving and shaking.
Diarrhea situation. You don't want that. Mm. You want to be just right.
Yeah.
You know?
Like a...
What's fucked up is, like we as humans can't get there. Like, we need all kinds of help.
Yeah.
You know, fiber pills and weird yogurt and Activa, I believe is the name.
Activia.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we're all so fucked up. Our diets are so fucked up. We're like, I literally have destroyed my body and it won't work properly now.
Well, the human body exists because it was the best version of like a cluster of garbage that survived. And so it's honestly astonishing it's that, like, we can even reach regularity.
The human body really is...
It's a jalopy.
It's kind of like a trash compactor.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a
steam engine.
Like a dump.
Yeah.
Actually, like a dump. Like a garbage dump. You know, where garbage is being processed.
Yeah.
That's all you are. Anyhow, was this supposed to be a happier note?
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, apparently.
Eat carbs.
Apparently, it's like carbs. Like, you know, if you don't eat carbs, it's very unhealthy. I don't know. I mean,
you'll be cut as hell.
You should not ever.
You'll be dead.
I did a great tweet about this. I don't know if you saw it. I said, your diet is killing you, but your corpse is going to be sexy AF. you know, which I don't know if that's like, I was like, wait, is this, am I going to, are there going to be like, are people like.
Eating disorder people are going to come for you.
This is the reality.
It's every fucking tweet.
This is the reality.
You can't tweet
in.
Anything.
I was like, am I going to get like attacked for being like.
I love being PC, but also shut the fuck up sometimes.
Sometimes I feel like, do you ever feel like you're like, look, I'm so.
I lost weight on my fight with my fiber supplements. I have honestly in the last year between fiber supplements and working out a little more because of my cholesterol, lost like 45, 50 pounds.
Wow, I should be taking more fiber supplements.
Changed the game.
But on your thing.
But I tweeted that and someone was like, are you fat shaming? I was like, no, I'm reporting the weight that I personally lost.
I know. No, but I will say this, like,
God.
Every once in a while, I'm like, I'm so on board, by the way. I want people to be happy and to be free. But every once in a while, I'm like,
maybe you shouldn't be happy.
No, but it's just like, I feel like, wait, is this how people get red-pilled? Because I'm like, fuck this shit. Like, come on. Like, come on, just give us a break for 1 second. Like, don't make me feel like I'm fat-shaming you. Like, your thing. Like, you're like, I'm
both
talking
sides
about...
of this is an inability to have perspective. Both red-pilling and ultra-fucking-Tumblr-woke attack-everybody-for-everything stuff.
I mean,
it's the same. It's no perspective.
I see threads on Twitter sometimes, and I'm like, this thread is so far down a rabbit hole that I'm like, I'm grasping to figure out where we're at right now. Like, where are we in the universe reading this thread? I'm like, it's like, I'm not trying to deny anybody their rights at all or to like take anything away from them or let them be the person that they want to be.
We're in a
but at some point,
theoretical
at some point,
zone.
You are like, I do feel like, wait a second, am I old? Am I crazy? Or possibly, is there like a bridge too far on some of this stuff? Like, is it like
I think
we're over policing?
You have to have perspective, and I think it's easier to have perspective if you've had to been forced to have it. So, like, queer people, people of color, are forced to have perspective about things and little slights, microaggressions, letting things go. For instance, like being a gay person, my entire youth was answering very stupid questions about gay people.
Like what?
Like who's the man and who's the woman in the relationship?
No,
or
really?
Can you have
that.
An orgasm if someone had sex with you in your butthole and you
Wait,
say
no,
like
people don't actually say that.
Oh, my entire life has been a series of questions. Wow. Were you born gay? Why are you choosing this? Stuff like that. Like basic.
Now, why did you choose to be gay? I've been wondering that about you.
The gifts. Really, I wanted to have better gifts on Twitter.
I always wonder, like, why choose to be gay? Such a
so you can share genes. Yeah. You want to share genes?
Genes. Oh, that's actually a great argument for.
Oh, doubling your wardrobe? The best.
That's a really, really good argument.
But
I'm trying to think, like, if I were gay, I would not date somebody. I don't think I'd be attracted to somebody who was my, like, shape.
See, my
size.
Problem is I'm attracted to all men.
Really?
All men.
I feel like
every man.
I'm trying to think of like what men I
think
find.
I might just be slutty.
I'm trying to think of like men I find most attractive, like a Jude Law. Now Jude Law's way smaller than me.
Sure,
he's a good looking guy.
Absolutely.
Who's another good looking guy? I like that Troye Sivan. He's a, you know, a handsome, handsome little guy.
Yeah, there's something about androgyny.
I guess there's a little bit of like kind of like
a Bowie.
Yeah, a Bowie, very handsome.
Yeah,
Morrissey in his heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Not the
see like I'll go from that. I'll turn around to a burly bear leather whatever, and then I turn around again and there's a nebbishy nerd, and I turn around again and there's an obese uncle, and then I turn around again and there's a 19-year-old college student.
I get it. That's
just like men.
I think it's how I am with women. Like Laura always gives me shit because I'm like, oh, you know, she's very attractive. And she's like, you literally think everybody's good looking.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll find something.
I don't know. There's always something.
It's always something.
I think there's, you can find on any person there is.
Everything but smell. I don't like bed smells.
What are bed smells?
I just don't like anyone that smells too much of anything or that smells bad.
Yeah.
Smell is the one thing that I can't find a nice thing
about.
Bad
smells. Yeah. Your little accent there is a little, you're like Long Island.
A little Long Island came in. I've had a little vodka.
Yeah. Did you? Oh, is that what you're drinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, brought my own handle.
All right, listen, we should wrap this up because we have to.
We got to get to this interview.
We got Owen Higgins who's going to talk about, amongst other things, resistance grifters, which I'm very excited to get to. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. More tomorrow.
What happens if you play Monopoly with real money?
You've got to pay the piper.
Okay, let's pay the piper.
There are no free lunches in this completely reinvented game of Monopoly. Yeah.
What does space sound like? What happens when you overwork yourself?
Do you believe that work-related stress has increased?
It reflects the fact of how little value we place on the well-being of human beings.
The Outline World Dispatch.
Every Monday through Thursday, we bring you a new story on the theme of power, culture, or the future. Handpicked from theoutline.com. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, your Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, or wherever you download your podcasts. Also, you can say, okay, Google, play me the news, and we're right there.
Oh my God, yeah!
Make your mornings a little weirder.
My guest today is a writer and journalist, and I think a brilliant man. His name is Owen Higgins. You may be familiar with some of his content. He wrote a great piece for The Outline last week about the resistance grifters. Owen, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So you did this piece for us, which I thought was quite charming and informative. And I've got a bunch of questions about it. But for the uninitiated, for people who haven't read it, you know, and by the way, if you haven't read it, you should go on to theoutline.com and check it out. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of this piece and your thinking about, like, your thinking, like, reasoning behind creating this particular piece of content for us.
Yeah. So, you know, I posted a tweet back on August 13th. Kind of ranking the resistance grifters, people who I felt were using the Trump years and kind of liberal anxiety over that for their own gain. And I kind of pitched that to you guys and worked out kind of a list, which includes people who are, you know, conspiracy theorists, people who are using this political moment, the fact that everybody's, you know, kind of freaking out about Trump to just make more money, And then of course the people, you know, kind of these people from like the George W. Bush administration and that kind of, I guess that kind of like conservative, conservative personalities, those people who are kind of reinventing themselves,
right?
After being kind of, you know, pushed out of polite society after the Iraq War, are kind of reinventing themselves.
Like, the people who are like, I'm, you know, this is the real spirit of the conservative party. The Republican Party is like this more centrist sort of, lover of American, you know, classic American democracy. And Trump is like treading on that. And so suddenly they're like, I'm with you, Hillary, or whatever. I mean, they're not with Hillary, but, you know.
I mean, these are the neocons. These are the guys that, you know, they don't care about any of these social issues that the base of the Republican Party cares about. All they care about is war. And because Trump is like a threat to that, not because Trump doesn't like war, but because Trump is just kind of this chaotic, has this chaotic stupidity that kind of threatens this idea of American kind of like endless war kind of empire thing. They don't like him because of that. Like nobody should mistake this. They don't dislike him for anything that he's doing. They dislike him for the fact that he's unpredictable and he's making it more difficult to, invade Iran.
Right. So
stuff like that.
So that's almost, I mean, the way you just said that, it's almost, and I'm sure this is not your intention, but it almost sounds like an endorsement of Trump, you know, like, cause these guys suck. These guys suck too, in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're not endorsing Trump, believe me. I mean,
I don't think
you are.
No. I mean, Trump is horrible and an utter disaster. And, you know, one of the worst things that could have happened to the country. But that doesn't change the fact that, you know, okay, let me try and say this differently. For me, the idea of Trump being impeached and leaving office and someone and Mike Pence becoming the president is almost more terrifying than the like utter horror that we're in right now.
Right.
Because Pence could get things done in a way.
He's an actual political operator.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he knows how to play the game, right? Trump just doesn't care. He just does whatever he wants. And like, to be clear, Trump and Pence have basically the same priorities. There's nothing that Pence would do that Trump wouldn't like. There's nothing that Trump is doing that Pence doesn't particularly like. It's just that Pence will be able to do it maybe in a more, a more professional manner.
Right. Like
it's not an endorsement of Trump. He's terrible.
There'd be less like midnight tweets in all caps.
Yeah. No, I mean, Pence would be shut the fuck up and do stuff under cover of darkness like the Republicans normally do. Right. Like he wouldn't be like, he wouldn't be like, we're going to launch a trade war on Twitter. Like he would just do the trade war or whatever. But let me challenge, but I don't want to get off that because I do want to talk about this piece, the grifters piece. But on the Pence thing, I hear you. I think Pence is terribly dangerous. I know everybody's like, impeach Trump, which I think is actually a fucking fantasy at this point. But like, Pence truly is a horrible person with horrible ideas. And I believe this, that Pence is a true believer in those ideas, which is makes him, in my opinion, much more dangerous than Trump, because I don't think Trump really believes much. Like, I think that Trump is just moving from sort of moment to moment, trying to like score a victory or a deal or a win or just like keep himself, his ego inflated in some way. Like, so that's why there's so much, it's so erratic, because I don't think he has like a strategy to do something. You know, I think people said, put really conservative Supreme Court judges in, and Trump's like, okay. Like, that makes sense. If that makes the Republicans happy, I'll do that. Like, do you think Trump cares about Roe v. Wade? I don't think he thinks about it for a second.
No, I mean, it's like he seems to, like, his one core belief is just his horrific racism.
Right. No, that's it.
Right. Like, yeah. That seems to be it. Like, like beyond that, like his understanding of the economy and politics is like rooted in like 1980s like action movies and like Michael Crichton books. Like, he doesn't, you know,
like
what I mean?
Like, like, yeah, yeah. His view of the world is like Escape from New York, basically.
Yeah, yeah. He was like talking to the Japanese Prime Minister Abe like last week or something like that, and people were like, you know, saying he doesn't understand that like their economy isn't, you know, the 80s and the 90s Japan. And I'm just thinking to myself, yeah, but like he saw a rising sun,
right?
You know, with Sean Connery
and was like, there's like auto jobs.
That's who makes the Walkmans.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like his brain just stopped learning anything new in like 1992. And it's like,
true.
That's it.
It's so true. But okay, but here's my point about Pence. So Pence is fucking dangerous because he's a true believer and he believes a bunch of really crazy stuff and truly is like a dyed in the wool, hardcore Christian, which I think is like as dangerous as any fundamentalist religion, any fundamentalist believer of any religion, right? Like, but nobody fucking voted for Pence. And when 2020 comes around, remember, we've only got a couple of years here. We got to ride out. And I really don't think Trump is going to be impeached between now and 2020. Like, I just don't. I mean, maybe there would be something started, but it's hard to imagine. I mean, Mueller's still going. There's so much other stuff. Like, the midterms have to happen. There's going to be so much chaos around the midterms.
And the length of the court system. It's not like.
Yeah. I mean, the Kavanaugh thing, I don't know what's going to happen with that. Anyhow, but long and short of it is like this. We get into 2020 and let's just say hypothetically Trump has been impeached, okay, and removed from office and
or dies.
Yes. The amphetamines and Diet Coke finally.
I think everybody secretly harbors this kind of like fantasy that like Trump is like, you know, on the toilet tweeting and keels, you know, his heart just fucking gives out. I don't know if you read the report. I mean, I understand he's as healthy as an ox from what I read. So,
yeah. But, yeah.
But what I'm saying is like in 2020, nobody's going to vote. Like anybody who was like, fuck yeah, Trump, those fucking MAGA hat wearing whoever they are not coming out for Mike Pence unless I'm like grossly underestimating how truly stupid the Republicans are.
No, I mean, I think that like Mike Pence is like, you know, he's a true believer in the kind of anti-abortion, anti-gay rights you know, wing of the evangelicals, but the reality is that white evangelicals really only care about one thing, and that's hating black people. I mean, like that's what the entire movement is based on. No matter what they tell you, back in the 60s and the 70s, the white evangelical movement was purely a backlash against it was white backlash against the civil rights movement. I mean, that's all it was, all that it ever is. And whenever I see people, you know, on network, you know, news, you know, wringing their hands over, like, I can't believe that the evangelical vote is still with Trump after all this stuff. It's like, yeah, they don't care about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
All they care about is that he hates black people as much as they do.
It's such a transparent. I mean, what's so crazy to me about the era we live in is like, if you have a brain at all and a notion of like humanity, it's so transparent when you see these people like the event, like literally every fucking word that comes out of an evangelical's mouth who like is pro-Trump is meaningless to me, right? It's like nothing you say about your religion or your beliefs could have any fucking meaning based on the person you would like to see making decisions for human beings in this country. Like, so, and I think that's so transparent, right? Like the Roy Moore stuff, you know, it's like, it's so obvious, like your goals are not good. You're not good people. You're not kind-hearted. You're not like loving. You know, you're shitty. You're bad.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sorry. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we can disagree on abortion. I'm happy to say, not that I would ever, you know, I would count maybe zero. I have zero friends that are like pro-life. But listen, if I met somebody and they're a reasonable person, they're like, well, listen, in this particular case, I'm sorry. I just am pro-life. You know, I would have a heated debate with them, but it's not like I just completely disregard their entire existence because that we disagree on this one point. I can understand the point. I actually, it makes a lot of sense to me, but But it's like that, if that were just like the one thing, you know, if it were like, well, we really are pro-life and, you know, it's Christian ideals and all this stuff. It's like, you can't be all of these things at once. Like, you just can't be. You can't love what Trump does and be this like spiritual.
And you can't talk about
person.
Like, I'm spiritual kind. I'm pro-life because I think that all clusters of cells are babies, yeah, and I want to protect them. And then be like, kids in cages, whatever. Deport yeah, like, whoever. Right. Kill whoever. I mean, no health care.
The fucking
crazy. It's just nonsense.
The stuff with, I mean, I don't know if you listened to, I talked about this in the last podcast, and I don't know if you listened to it. I'm not a big Daily fan, but they did two episodes on the border separations, and and, you know, it was crazy just listening to them talk about the enormous amount of lying that the government did and, like, the abuse. Just really listening to people who've gone and reported on it and, like, the abuse. It's like you cannot be a Christian, like a good Christian, and let that happen and feel comfortable with it, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, so hold on. So anyhow, so here's my thought, though. But with Pence, he's dangerous. He sucks. Evangelicals are full of shit. Agree. Totally agree on that. But do you really think that Republicans will turn out and vote for Pence in 2020 the way they – not that like the turnout was crazy, but clearly Trump got some people motivated to come and vote. Like, do you see that happening in 2020 if Trump gets impeached and Pence is the guy they've got to put up? Or are they putting somebody else up?
I mean, even if they put Trump up, just
well, they can't put Trump. I mean, okay, fine, but I'm just saying, if Pence
like
is the
base
president,
stay activated?
If Pence is the president, like they run him, right? And then are people voting for him?
I think that the thing that we need to remember is that he'll be going up against somebody from the Democratic Party. And like if there is an institution in American life that can fuck this up, it's the Democrats. So wow. Like, I'm serious though. Point. Like I know that,
yeah.
Like I am saying it in kind of humorous way, but seriously, like they'll blow it.
I believe you. I've been trying to think of the combinations of Democrats that could win. Like, because it's got to be a duo, I think. Like, at this point, you know what I mean? I mean, one of the things about Hillary, I mean, of course, there are many, now, you know, I don't want to get into the whole Hillary thing, but like, I know everybody's got many problems with Hillary, but like, I think like the Tim Kaine thing to me was one of the most profound fucking, like, so your running mate is just this, like, I mean, I understand, like, Trump.
It was
Trump,
the mirror image of Sarah Palin. It was, like, the exact of everything boring,
oh, yeah,
everything
yeah. No,
whatever.
If you could take all of what made Sarah Palin electrifying to Republicans.
And then image reverse
like,
it into
it's like,
boring.
what would make even a very middle-of-the-road Democrat not excited?
Yeah.
That's Tim Kaine in it.
That was wild.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, because I think if you had a thrown, like, a – I mean, now, first off, I mean, my thing was, like, how could – just – just be like Bernie.
Just grab Bernie. Or like
just
Warren,
just
grab
Bernie.
Somebody
look, I know,
that like people.
Just be, I would have been, if I were Hillary, I'd have been like, please, Bernie, just fucking ride with me here. Like, be my VP. And I know that sounds crazy to people, but, you know, that shit would have been really sick. I think that would have been very effective, right? Like, they definitely would have won together. But just like anybody who's like, you know, to your point. So now I think of duos. Like, who are the people that we know of right now who could reasonably challenge Trump? Trump. Now we're not talking about Pence, because I think with Pence it's more of a, you know, you could throw a Biden in there. I think it's like Biden versus Pence.
I don't want to say it.
No, I get it. But
no, but
like,
I don't want to say what I'm thinking.
What?
I am thinking you get like a Bloomberg.
Oh, nobody's gonna vote for.
I know
Jew, Michael Jew.
I'm
Michael
saying
Bloomberg.
As Vice. You put that in there,
sorry,
and then you can throw someone exciting at the top of the ticket.
I don't know.
Someone electrifying.
Oh,
and you're
vice
like,
president?
Yeah.
A Jewish vice president?
Yeah.
I don't know that America
I think if
can
Biden...
handle. I don't know if America can handle a Jew that close all to right. the Oval Office.
I mean, they were rejected in 2000.
Right.
Well, actually, no, they actually technically did elect him, but that's another story.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That is true,
that is
actually.
True.
Yeah. Okay, but they found a way.
Right. Yeah.
They found a way
America
to,
found
to
a way.
Kill that. They found a way to kill that. I completely forgot. God, what another shitty fucking choice for a running mate.
Oh, just terrible. Terrible.
You're talking about Lieberman.
Right? Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, just like
disaster.
People forget about him. It's the worst. Such a fucking piece of shit.
Slime.
Anyhow, you know, one a great example of the Democratic, like the classic, DNC sort of Democratic Party move. It's like, here's this.
Oh,
like,
just like, but just like a total loathsome, like, just horrible, horrible man who immediately, you know, showed exactly who he was, you know, during the Bush administration. But as far as like, I think that unless it's like a governor or something, I think it's Kirsten Gillibrand is going to win the nomination. So you just, you
really?
Have to, yeah. Yeah. I think that there's no question about that. Bernie's not going to win it.
Really?
There's no way Bernie will win.
Do you think he's going to, is he running?
If he runs, he will not, he won't be the nominee, but I don't even know if he does. I think maybe he wants to play Kingmaker.
But you know, the thing about Bernie is, like, I think people have this notion that Bernie is like a slam dunk. And I think if Bernie won the nomination, I don't think it's a slam dunk at all. I mean, I think it's a real uphill battle for a lot of America.
I think the closest it came to a slam dunk was like 2016 for him. Because...
But it's a combo. But if there's a combo there, if it's like Bernie and he's got a running mate who is like. It's like Bernie. I'm just throwing shit out here, by the way. It's like Bernie and like Cory Booker.
Cory Booker.
I'm just throwing out like the kind of thing that a mainstream Democrat is.
I don't know who tweeted it, but someone said Cory Booker was made in a BuzzFeed lab to lose the 2020 election, and it's true.
Maybe
the thing is that Bernie's too old.
Trump's too old, and he's the fucking president.
But Trump is younger than Bernie.
He is
younger than Bernie, and that's the thing, is that, like, I think that if you're going up against Trump, you have to, like, talk about the fact that his brain doesn't work, you know?
Do any Democrats have the guts to address that head on? Or is it, you know, the Democrats are famous for, I think about this all the time, the John Kerry Swift boat shit. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, where, you know, it's like John Kerry should have been like, hey, fuck you. Like, you know, this shit happened and I'm not going to stand here and like take this shit. By the way, I mean, not saying John Kerry is great, but I'm just saying, like, the play was, it was like when they go, you know, when they go low, we go high. It's always, the Democrats are always like playing a different game.
It's also a bad idea of what high is.
No, but
they don't play from top of their intelligence. They play from top of being like, I don't know, I could trick you. Look over here. We're talking in vagaries.
But there's this whole idea of like, it's like, be the bigger man. And it's like, well, actually, like with Trump, that shit doesn't work. Like, it's been proven to fail. Like, you know, like, you actually have to kind of go for the jugular, you know, and like,
and that's not always the dumbest or the lowest move.
Like, I think Obama kind of won some. I think he won some points when like the race thing became a thing, and he like, and the Reverend Wright thing was a thing.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm going to address this and talk about it. I think that was a very different move for a Democrat, because usually Democrats are like, it's like kind of to your point, like, yeah, don't look over there, look over here.
Well,
like,
what about this?
If Obama had shown like the kind of merciless politicking and willingness to do what needed to be done that he did with like cutting Reverend Wright loose for the rest of the time that he was in office, I think that he would have had a lot more success. But he got into office and then like kind of immediately was like, well, we're going to have to compromise.
Right. Well, this,
and I think that
Democrats always do that.
And that's a classic Democrat thing too.
No, they love it. Well, the Democrats love to be like, they are the people. I mean, there's a famous, they're like the, what is the fucking thing with like the, I don't know. There's some famous story here that I can't think of. Like,
give a mouse a cookie.
No, not give a mouse a cookie.
Because that's what the Democrats
like,
do
it's
too.
Like, they're like, let me reach across the aisle, and like they think that like across the aisle there's another hand reaching out, but actually it's
and
a
you're
fucking,
meeting equally.
It's like a fucking alligator, and it chomps their hand off, you know. And they're like, I can't. Oh my!
I just think the middle of the aisle keeps slowly moving, and we keep reaching, and they keep reaching a little less.
But it's like, yeah, these guys. It's like you can't give them any quarter. It's clear to me that like the Republicans would not give. Look at it. The Republicans will not give Democrats any fucking quarter. Like, of course, they want to hold on to everything they can for as long as they can. And the Democrats are like, well, maybe you guys will actually act swell to us. Like, maybe it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. It's never fucking okay.
We'll treat you with dignity, and you'll treat us with dignity.
Yeah, right. Like, I get, like, being the better person, but it's not working.
No, that works in, like, your co-op where you're talking about whatever. It doesn't work on a national scale when you're talking to, like, a vehement KKK member who wants to, like, put people in cages.
Right. It's like the further they reach across the aisle, the more that the Republican Party moves into, like, a fucking...
outer space.
They're moving into white hoods and SS outfits.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you didn't answer my question. Pence 2020, what do you think his odds are?
50-50.
Okay. fuck, we're screwed. Pence is 50-50. I mean, that's bad news.
Yeah, I mean, because it should be like he has like a 20% chance, but I think he has a 50% chance because of the Democrats.
So you think Gillibrand is a slam dunk for the nomination? Is that what you're telling me?
I think if it's going to be a senator, it's 100% going to be her.
And okay, if it's not a senator,
then I have no idea.
I don't know.
It could be somebody like, you remember, if we were talking, if this was 12 years ago, right, and we were talking about who was going to be the nominee in 2008, like we would not be talking about the person who won.
Yeah. No, I was convinced
because he wasn't even on our radar.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
how did that happen? Where's the next? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember too when he was running, I'm like, no, America's never going to go for this name. I was just like, he seems great, but no matter what, I know America, they're just not going to go for, they can't handle this name. Like it's too far afield for America. And then I was like, you know, shocked to discover that was not a barrier. I thought it would be something as stupid as that. So, you know, of course the race issue, but like, I was like, the combination of all this is just no way this guy's going to become president. But I think it's like, look, you had, this is the thing. I do get a little bit of hope when I think about this point. I think people were so broken by Bush, the Bush presidency. I think generally the mood of the country was so broken by it that that they needed something radically different, right? And like Obama, in many, many ways, for a lot of Americans, I mean, probably the majority of voting Americans, Obama looked like a radically different type of candidate, you know?
He was like, if you were trapped in like a Circuit City and someone was like, you want to come over to this Apple store? And not saying the Apple store is perfect, but America was like, it's sleek, it's nice, it's clean.
That's a really interesting
analogy. Now we were in the Apple store for a while and someone's like, you want this shitty Android phone I found on the street? We're like, yeah, jailbreak me, baby. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good, wow. Ryan, you've got a whole new bit here, but that's interesting to think about. Yeah, right.
That's actually a really good analogy, though.
Yeah, the Android phone is like you can hack it and do all kinds of fucking shit.
Yeah, let's just get
it.
Crazy. Let's get some weird Chinese.
It's got like malware all
torrents
over it.
Down on this.
But it's like fast and loose.
Yeah.
Versus like this clean, sort of very like guided experience we've been having in the app, the Obama.
So I was like, and then it was like, you want an iPhone 8 or do you want this crazy jailbreak thing? And you were like, jailbreak.
It's like the Galaxy Note.
It's like this slick piece of technology that like it does. It works really well, but like, you know, it's also listening to you all the time. You know, like
it doesn't
you know,
do everything you want it like to
there's,
do.
There's tons do of in-app purchases to get like, what you want.
You can't
out of
install
it.
Your own. Like you can't use like your a different browser. You know, but. But it does a lot of things you need it to do, and it does them reasonably well.
Yeah.
Well, like headphone jack doesn't have a headphone jack anymore. Like it's just like it's changing things that you don't want it to change.
And it's like we wanted to put a headphone jack in, but we were met
like,
with.
And then Samsung is like, check this out. You can install anything you want on it. It's got a fucking pen. It's got six cameras.
It's got an app store. Entirely piracy.
It's a 7-inch phone. It's like whoa, this is a crazy uncharted new territory.
They're like, none of it works. It sounds crazy.
A bunch of like bloatware on it, a bunch of carrier like Verizon apps and shit on it.
Yeah.
But they're offering it at a pretty low price.
And you're like, yeah.
Exactly.
You're like, I guess I'll try something.
Let's go crazy,
different, baby.
I
mean, actually, Samsung makes a pretty decent phone nowadays, but I understand the analogy.
Yes.
Not to get into the qualities of Samsung's devices, but okay. All right, so let's get to the topic at hand here.
Yeah, we got to talk about these grifters.
We got to talk about grifters. So you read this article.
Right.
I really thought this was good. I enjoyed it. It's basically like all of these people who are like hashtag resistance, but are like, you know, like John Brennan is a really good example. You know, John Brennan, who is like, you know, I think if you look at his record, most people, especially liberal or left or leftists or left-leaning would look at his record and go like, this is not a good guy. He's not like my buddy. This is the head of the CIA, right? Mm-hmm. CIA does a lot of fucked up shit. I'm not saying CIA is just bad, but they do a lot of bad stuff.
But before we even like what, let's get into what specifically is a grifter and how these people are using the resistance.
That's a good question. What's the criteria for a resistance grifter?
Yeah, so I just kind of like went for people that I felt were kind of conning people in the resistance, right? So like when I think of the resistance, I kind of think of, you know, people at the Women's March, who, you know, it's like their first political action that they've taken, maybe ever, certainly in a long time. Kind of like Blue Dog Democrats.
Blue Dog.
People who just kind of like, it's not even so much that they disagree with everything that Trump is trying to do. It's just that they don't like the fact that he's really rude. You know,
right?
So that's kind of how I think of the resistance,
right?
But the thing is that they're also like, there are a lot of people within that group as well that have like real reasons to feel really threatened by the Trump administration. People of color, gay people, women,
right?
Immigrants, yeah. And I think that for a lot of those people, and all the groups that I mentioned before too, I think that there's just this feeling of omnipresent dread about the Trump administration. You're always just kind of reaching for something that could possibly stop, you know, all of this from happening. And in what these grifters are doing is that they're taking advantage of that kind of desperation and that need for some kind of an answer, that need for, you know, like just the promise that this will be over soon, that Trump will go away. And they're either, you know, doing this to sell books or to get donations or just for
to become like a kind of celebrity, like a Twitter celebrity or
just become famous, or, you know, like as we've mentioned a couple times, like, you know, and I was really thinking about this when you were saying just a couple minutes ago about how like the mood of the country after Bush, like it's hard to remember now, but people hated him and they hated his administration, and all of these people that were in his orbit were kind of like disgraced for a long time. And now they're using the resistance to kind of con their way back into polite society. So,
right.
So there's a lot of different ways that the grift is, coming out. But basically what is just people taking advantage of this movement and this desperation to con their way into whatever they want.
Right. Like David Frum is like a classic warmonger. I mean, like this guy's like very responsible for the Iraq war, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. in many ways. Right. And now he's like this, you know, his presence is like this elder statesman who it's like, we must respect the rule of law and democracy in America. And this is an affront. And, you know, it's like, fuck you. Like, you literally helped to sell like a completely invented war for the purposes of commerce to America, which is like resulted in like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of deaths at this point. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. I mean, like, I would say almost definitely like about a million deaths, completely destabilized, the entire Middle East,
created ISIS, essentially
created ISIS. I mean, it's all, and all based on bullshit. And, you know, and he just gets to kind of pretend that didn't happen.
Now he's a freedom fighter. Now he's like one of us.
Yeah. Now he's on. You know, an editor for the Atlantic. Now he, you know.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, writes this book called Trumpocracy, and keeps like whining and sniffling about like how, you know, this isn't like the conservative movement. This isn't what it's supposed to be. But like, you know, well, first of all, bullshit. That's what it is.
Right.
That's what it has been my whole life. And second of all, like that's not enough to wash that blood from your hands, man. Like, but because of the fact that he is saying that he thinks that Trump is bad, that people just love him.
Right. And so let me, I have a question. I'm going to challenge, not challenge exactly, because I don't want to sound like I'm defending anybody on this list, but you know, I was surprised Michael Avenatti's on here. Now there's no doubt that Michael Avenatti is a he's
an opportunist.
I mean, he's definitely been grifting. I mean, he's definitely an opportunist. And I think if you look at his career, I mean, his career seems actually fairly interesting from what I've read. But like, the Stormy Daniels thing, like, was actually, he certainly took full advantage of something, but it's been a fairly important part of whatever's going on in Trump's orbit, like around like Trump's behavior and whether or not he's done things that are like literally illegal, right? Like, it seems like the initial presentation of Michael Avenatti on the scene was kind of like, he's a loudmouth, he's outspoken, he's on TV, but his actual point wasn't like buy my book. It was like, we have dirt on Trump and it's going to come out and it's important for like people to know this, which it turns out, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd like to hear your take on this, was actually somewhat true. So was there a point where he converted from just that guy who's like, Stormy Daniels' story deserves to be heard and we're going to get it out there because it's important, to like grifter? Or was that all part of the grift?
No, I mean, I think that I think Avenatti is maybe someone who does straddle the line a little bit there. I think that it can both be true that this guy is a publicity hound and is relishing in his role within the hashtag resistance, to, you know, I mean, he's like floating the idea that he's going to run for president now. He's talking about like all of this, he turns everything into a press conference. I mean, he loves the spotlight, you know?
I mean, he could probably, I mean, like, he wouldn't get the nomination, but he'd probably get some people pretty fired up if he ran. Like, the resistance people.
Yeah, I guess what I'll say is that I'm not 100% on whether or not he is going to run or if he's just, you know, doing this for attention. But I would say that it can both be true that he is kind of grifting his audience for attention and publicity on the one hand, and it can also be true on the other hand that the work that he's doing for Stormy Daniels is actually professional work that he's doing for his client to get this stuff out there. And I think both of those things can be true with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he exists maybe in a slightly different space than some of these other folks, like fucking Louise Mensch.
Yeah.
Which is like, Louise Mensch is no one really takes her seriously, right? She's like buddies with Milo. Like, isn't she like just a complete piece of shit? Unless I'm mistaken, like, does anybody actually, are resistance people actually like paying attention to what she says?
So they're both, her and Eric Garland and Seth Abramson.
Eric Garland is a time for some game theory, right? That's his.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. And Scott Dworkin and the Krasenstein brothers. And I think that's it pretty much on the list. Are probably the people who are taken the least seriously out of everybody, right? I mean, like, right. they're all pretty much just blatant frauds. I don't think anybody really takes them too seriously, but they do have a pretty strong social media following, all of the people that I'm talking about here. And I think that's why they... even though people don't take them seriously and it's just obvious what they're doing, some people do take them seriously, and enough of those people take them seriously to merit their inclusion, even though like anybody with like half a brain takes one look at these guys and is just like, this is ridiculous.
And then there are the people like Nicole Wallace or, for example, like Anna Navarro, who... their pivot to resistance media and whatever from conservative, like conservatism, conservative politics kind of stuff, makes people take them even more seriously because they're like, they must really know. And they must, they're being very centrist and fair because they've turned, you know, they were part of the GOP and now they're saying this, so they must know. And so everyone takes everything that they
say.
As opposed to saying you had terrible opinions and now you have slightly less terrible opinions because you had an opportunity to work here at The View or MSNBC or whatever.
No, that's a really good point. Like, there is a trend line here where it's like the fact that it's like you used to be in, you know, you worked for George W. Bush. And so, wow, what a profound moment here that you are as a conservative.
Even you.
As a conservative, you are voicing your concern about what is happening in our country.
And not to make it a totally different topic, but that's also the McCain thing of like everyone held McCain up as and we could talk a lot about his positives and his negatives. And we'll talk about that in a second. But it was another example of someone being like, if John McCain says this is bad, it must be bad, as opposed to saying like, you know, if someone who has never had opinions that I disagree with continues to say that this is bad, like I would take them more seriously. It's sort of like, I guess, a logical fallacy.
Yeah. I think, you know, as far as Nicole Wallace goes, of every single person on this list, she's the only one that I respect. And it's a grudging respect because I think that she is absolutely like reptilian. I mean, like she's and like not like a reptoid, but like she's okay. Just
not a shapeshifter.
But
okay, just to she's for our listeners.
Yeah. She's incredibly talented. If anybody who's watched her show will like can tell that immediately. Very talented on the camera. And she has a lot of on-air charisma. And what she's using that for, and what she's using her, you know, position at MSNBC and her position in the quote-unquote resistance, is to basically rehabilitate the image of the entire George W. Bush administration. I mean, because any time that you go onto her show, I mean, it's just like a parade of these. You know, neocon ghouls who like should have no place in polite society, right? After the Bush administration, let alone the fact that Wallace was, you know, press secretary through some pretty horrible things and was spinning that for the media. But, you know, she spends her entire show just kind of like talking about how Trump is bad because he is hurting the national security state. As opposed to Trump is bad because the things that he's doing are bad within the American system.
Right.
But she's really good at it. Right. So
it's interesting. Very interesting. I mean, I hadn't thought of it that way, but it is very true. Like it's almost admirable, you know, almost. I mean, I don't think that's the right way to describe it, but
it's something that you can have respect for even while you realize that it's just completely scummy and evil.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
it's me and Omarosa.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Omarosa.
Deep and powerful respect for Omarosa as a manipulator and media figure, knowing that she's the true embodiment of sociopathy.
Well, Omarosa is really interesting too, because it's like, I mean, actually I feel like could be on the list, you know, but it's not quite the same thing, but it's like,
I mean, she's a grifter. Might not be just a resistance grifter, but she's a grifter.
Yeah, but she's on a level that these guys can't even like. They can't even hope to be on what she does. Like,
she's a grifter supernova.
Yeah,
who is that fucking journalist that I hate who wrote that book, Michael Wolff? who I truly despise him as a journalist, and I think he fucking sucks. But talk about a grift. Talk about it. Whatever he did, and I do believe most of. I mean, a lot of his books probably is just sort of invented, which is also kind of amazing.
In my
opinion. Like, if you could just make it up, that's cool too. Like, more power to you. I think you should run with that. But that's like a kind of grift, if you ask me. Like, but it's a much higher level grift.
Yeah.
He got like in the White House.
Yeah, it's a grift with a hustle.
Yeah.
It's a real hustle. Anyhow.
And he just sat there. He sat there.
He's amazing. Okay, so here's what I want to know. Like, if this was premeditated or accidental, which is like, I think he kind of like was like favorably talking about Trump, like leading up to the election, and then used that, correct me if I'm wrong, used that to like say, hey, you guys are doing such amazing things. I want to be on the inside. I want to see what happens. And then wrote a book that was like, these people are fucking animals that should be put down or whatever. You know, they're like completely out of control. Do you think he always intended to do that? Because I guess in that case, he's a fucking genius.
Or did he lick his finger, feel where the winds were going?
Or did he just say, like, maybe I could roll the dice on this one if I can get in there?
Yeah. I think that he probably was like, I can see the way that this is going, and that's why I'm going to... I think he could see the way that things were going once Trump got elected, and was like, everyone's going to hate these guys, so I'm just going to write this book.
And the best grifters can pivot, baby.
That's very smart. All right, let's talk about John McCain real quick before we wrap up here, because we're running out a little bit out of time. But there's so much horrible shit to talk about. There's, you know, you can't fit it all into one segment. So John McCain has died. John McCain. Now, people, I think a hot button issue for people who identify as Democrats, some form of Democrat, has been how to talk about John McCain, his legacy. There's been a big heated debate between, I would say,
you can only be nice to him.
Leftists,
you can't be
liberals.
Nice to him.
Leftists and liberals have been battling it out,
as usual.
Which is like, you know, right? There's two people are like, he was a great American hero. He was an honorable man. He said, he
believed
no.
what he believed,
said, no,
and he fought for that.
He's like, no, Obama's not an Arab, which is the worst thing you could be.
Yeah,
he's just a regular American. You know, there are people like, you got to honor his amazing legacy, you know, and then there's people who are, here's what I think when I think of John McCain. I think John McCain introduced Sarah Palin to the American public, like with a smile on his fucking face. And for that, his memory is permanently tarnished as far as I'm concerned.
Even the health.
He was a fucking
stuff.
Bad politician too, just all, you know, to be honest. But like, Owen, what are your thoughts on the legacy of John McCain and also the battle to figure out how we should just talk about his legacy on the internet, on Twitter, in the 2 days it matters?
Yeah, I mean, well, I obviously think that John McCain was not a good person, and was not a good politician, and did a lot of damage with his time in power, and that because he's a public figure, he should be remembered that way by the country. I think that one of the things that has been missing in the way that he's being remembered is because, you know, what people are saying, people bring up that Obama's not an Arab thing a lot. And a lot of people are rightfully saying that that was actually not, like, he wasn't saying something particularly good there. You know, like because of the implication in what he said that being an Arab was antithetical to American values. But I think that there's this idea that he was this, you know, upstanding guy who, you know, fought for Americans of all colors and creeds. And that's kind of driving a lot of like the way that people are talking about him. But you know, that leaves out a lot, you know, because as a member of Congress, he voted against sanctions on apartheid South Africa 6 times. He voted against the creation of Martin Luther King Day in 1983. He endorsed Arizona's, you know, the papers, please, border security law back in like, the Obama years.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't that long
ago. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, but he was right behind that. He called for, you know, to complete the dang fence, which was, you know, the border wall. On all of these issues, he was very bad, and none of this stuff is mentioned when people are remembering him. Right. All of,
well, it's like in death, you know, in death suddenly. I mean, I understand. It's like, you know, there's, you know, propriety gets in the way of truth all the time, doesn't it? I mean, particularly in America, particularly in like the conversation, particularly with the media, mainstream media. You know, the New York Times bends over backwards all the time to be proprietous instead of correct. You know, like or whatever their idea of propriety is. It's like the what was the fucking
Well, it's like they write a hagiography where they're like, here's the hits.
What was the headline the other day? Oh, the one about the murder. They had you know, there's this, I can't think of the Twitter account, but it's like it tracks changes to New York Times headlines.
News diffs.
And it's like I forget what it is. It's like editing the gray lady or something.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not news diffs. But it was like they did it, you know, they did a headline that was like, well, I mean, this is kind of maybe not even the right example, but it was like, you know, illegal immigrant kills woman in blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it took them like 7 versions of the headline to make it what the story actually was about, which was Trump seizes on murder of woman to push his anti-immigration narrative or whatever, which is actually what was happening. It was like he was at a rally being like, this is what I'm telling you, everybody. You know, but
thank God for CMS.
But they do shit, you know, where it's like Trump uses mistruths to, and it's like, you mean he lied about something? Like, what are you trying to be nice to him?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they had this. I mean, I think they've had a conversation about like, well, we don't want to say lie because we don't know his intentions. It's like, well, infer his fucking intentions.
Yeah.
Like, you can use your brain, you know, but they're like, well, it would be improprietous for us to. Anyhow, the point is, I feel like the media in general, the conversation when someone dies always becomes like, you know, like if tomorrow Harvey Weinstein dies, you know, the fucking headline in the Times.
So many good movies.
The headline in the Times is going to be like, leaving behind a complex legacy. Movie mogul Harvey Weinstein dies or whatever, right? You know, and it's like,
you guys like Shakespeare in love. Yeah.
it's not that complex. He did a bunch of rapes that we found out about. So yeah. All the other stuff he did is sort of like,
feels like we could just concentrate on the rapes.
Like, not that important anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry, like you don't get the credit for Shakespeare in love if you did any rapes. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's
we'll give that to Gwyneth.
That's the rule.
No, you don't like
that's the
like
rule work at all.
Like that, like, you know, when I watch movies, you know, because I grew up in like the, you know, 90s and 80s and 90s. And I remember Miramax.
Great time.
Great time.
Great time in,
great time in American history.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is like Miramax was his.
But now, now, right, when I see that logo come up, like on cable or like even if it's a movie that like I know that I like and I want to watch, like, there is that moment where I'm like, ah, shit, you know, because I remember what he did, and it kind of like ruins the experience for me. And I'm not saying that in a way that like means that's like the worst thing to happen with Harvey Weinstein or something like that. What I'm saying is like that's not a complex legacy, like that's his legacy, right. That's who he is.
But that's the thing is that right, and that's it's the like, thing with McCain is like. You know, yeah, first off, yes, he was a prisoner of war. He was tortured. Like, that's real. And that's like, he should be honored for going to war for his country. It was the wrong war, you know, bad war. I mean,
people are complex people.
What war is good? But I mean, I'm just saying, like, he went to war as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through a pretty, what I understand is a fairly hellish experience.
Awful.
You know? And like, you know, let's not forget that. Like, let's not pretend like that didn't happen. Like, that's something that he did in service to his country. And, you know, I would not. But, you know, then look at the fucking record, right? I mean, the apartheid votes are an amazing example of this kind of stuff, you know? Like, you know, I mean, look at even, you know, his, like, people act like McCain has been, like, this really vocal, like, you know, Trump, anti-Trumper or whatever. But like the reality is that wasn't really the
case.
Or
even if it's
the
like
healthcare vote, sure, the healthcare vote, it's like that's one tiny little thing. But in the grand scheme of what was going on with his party while Trump was rising, where was McCain saying, this is fucked up. Like Republicans need to rally against this, whatever's happening here. Like he wasn't talking about that shit.
Or even the thing that people say, which is like, take Trump out of it. He believed what he believed and he fought for what he believed because he thought it was right for his country. It's like, okay, but what he believed was bad and hurt a lot of people
right.
And he fought really hard to make that happen.
Right.
So lots of people who do terrible things truly believe what they're doing. It
Hitler,
doesn't
absolve. Hitler,
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's jump right.
let's just jump right to Hitler.
Yeah.
But that is the thing. It's like, that's the stuff that's so easy to ignore because you're like worried about, are you honoring.
But listen, you know, I feel like you don't you feel like you can honor that stuff. We are complex people who can hold the two ideas in our heads. Also, he died of cancer, which is a sensitive topic for a lot of people. He had the same kind of cancer that 2 weeks ago my cousin has just been diagnosed with, stage 3.
Yeah.
And so this news hit my family really hard, not from a political standpoint, but it was tough to hear.
Right.
And the people dancing on the, the cancer grave.
Yeah. No, I'll say
there
this.
Were people dancing on the cancer grave because of the healthcare stuff.
I'll say this. I mean, the thing about... here's the thing that fucking annoyed me on Twitter. Of course, Twitter, everything annoys a person on Twitter. Nobody should look at Twitter, basically. But if you do, this thing that I thought was like I agree with the sentiment that people are like, fuck you, McCain, rest in hell or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like I understand the sentiment.
Sure.
I'm sure that we share many of the same political views. I just think like in general, I'm not saying don't talk about the true kind of person someone was when they die. But celebrating the death to me is like also like unnecessary. Like I saw a lot of, I'm not going to name names, but people are like, I'm so fucking glad this piece of shit is dead. It's like, I do understand the sentiment. But if Trump died tomorrow, okay, maybe I'm putting myself out there in a really weird way right now. But if Trump died tomorrow, which I want to be clear, I'm not making any threats, but, would I be like, fuck, yes, Trump is dead on Twitter?
I think you can feel that and you can feel sad for Barron and you can and you can.
I don't feel sad for Barron.
No, but you can feel sad for like, you know, Tiffany or
I feel
whoever.
Sad
like,
for America, actually, that he's alive.
You
but
can
like,
also you can also want to take a dump on his grave and
no,
post a
I'm
picture
saying,
where you're like,
I,
whatever.
But saying,
we're complicated people.
Would I tweet it? I think this is the thing.
Yeah,
that
okay.
I mean
publicly.
Like is it necessary?
A public celebration.
It's necessary to say this is the shit that John McCain did as a politician and here's why I was fucked up. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it's different to do that than to say, like, I'm so glad John McCain is dead, which is just sort of tacky.
You know, I think that, like...
It's one man's opinion.
When someone like McCain dies, media, both, like, social media and news media are, like, so consumed with, I think we referred to as hagiography. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that word. Mm-hmm. Hagiography.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, let's just.
All right. Oh, yeah. So they're consumed with this hagiographic way of remembering this guy, where it's not necessarily based in reality, and a lot of it is kind of, you know, papering over the horrible things that he did, and I think that there's an impulse to like react to that strongly in the other way. But while I think that you could easily say that if McCain had died 40 years earlier, maybe the world would have been a better place because he wouldn't have, you know, like a lot of these wars wouldn't have been extended that he had advocated for. I'm saying you could make that argument, right? And I think that it's totally fine to make that argument, you know, when on within minutes of him dying because he's a public figure. And I don't think that you get to like kind of wriggle out of being remembered for who you were when you're a public figure and you are being remembered as a public figure. But going on to a social media platform where your every thought is viewable by millions and millions of people if they want to, and saying, fuck yeah, I'm glad he's dead. I'm not even saying that that's like the wrong reaction to have. I'm just saying that's kind of dumb because of like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's totally fine. I think fine to go onto the social media and be like, even to say that like I said, that like, you know, if he had died earlier, maybe the world would have been a better place. I think that's totally, that's fine, like whatever. But to then say, I'm like, I am personally happy that this other human being is dead. For me, that's just, I mean, I'm not even saying that I disagree with that sentiment or I agree with it. All I'm saying is that is like, to me, seems like you're making things a little too personal for a forum a public forum where millions of people can see what you're saying.
I agree. It's 100%. Just like kind of in poor taste. But you, I mean, you wrote about to some degree. You wrote about this for us in July. July 2017.
Like a year ago.
Well, whew, time flies, which is a piece called You Can Feel Bad About John McCain's Cancer and Still Hate His Legacy, which I think makes this argument at the time when he was – I think this is sort of right when it was announced that he was sick or very sick.
Yeah, it was like a couple of days after.
And it kind of articulates this point exactly, which is like there's this kind of a separation there that is healthy to have and as a human being. Like – that, and by the way, I mean, again, like I don't know. I guess I don't feel happy about, I don't feel like overjoyed about pretty much anybody dying for the most part, I guess. Like even the worst people. I mean, I can imagine people, like if I were alive during the time of Hitler and I heard they're like, Hitler's dead, I'd be like, that's fucking great.
I would get a personal thrill if Trump died because it would mean danger, avoided danger for me. However.
But like, I can't think of a person who's died recently. Who
that is an extreme example.
Who did not have enough of a complicated like persona, public person that there wasn't some part of me that's like, well, they were a person though, you know, like they were actually a human being.
There's no such thing as a slippery slope in my opinion, and we can tell. You can tell art, you can tell porn when you look at it. I can tell whether someone is a human, complicated human being who made multiple choices in their life and leaves a complex legacy, or if they're like a human monster like Hitler. And I think I can look at that and tell the difference.
That's the thing that
I can tell the difference. I'm an adult.
That's the thing that like was so crazy when and this is a whole rabbit hole, and I don't want to go down it right now, but I'll just say this, and then we I think we have to wrap it. Like, the Osama bin Laden thing, you know, when they killed him, I in no way, I'm not going to defend anything about what Osama bin Laden did in his life, you know, but like, and certainly I understand the reason why there was a celebratory mood amongst a certain component of Americans,
but the idea that
I would get drunk and go out on like a lamppost and start chanting USA because somebody got shot in the head, anybody, seems really weird, to just like a weird notion. Like that doesn't check, it doesn't square with like my humanity, not because I like Osama bin Laden or think he's a good guy, just because like I don't feel like, like winning a war is different than shooting a single person in the fucking face, you know? Like they're very different things. Like, and you know, of course, I'm anti-war, so whatever. But like, you know what I mean? I think it's similar to that.
You can feel a sense of peace, I think, when your enemy is no longer a threat to you, or like you feel like an issue is resolved. But you're right. Like a celebratory thrill from violence
There is a parallel to that. With the McCain thing where people are on Twitter going like, fuck you, McCain, rest in hell, right? Like, or whatever, burn in hell. Like, with the Osama bin Laden thing, which is like, it's just like, it's a weird notion to celebrate any person's death.
I think both of those men dying, and I mean, this reminds me of, that's a whole digression I'm not going to go into. I was going to start talking about Reagan, but never mind. But like both of those guys dying, like, but it is more than just their actual physical death. It's also like a political moment. So you should be expected to have, if you're a politically minded person, like some kind of a political reaction to it. But again, like you're saying, like both of you are saying, I mean, it's having that visceral, what was it like? Having a visceral thrill about violence, I think, is what you said. That is maybe not a normal thing for. I mean, unfortunately, I think that is actually like a normal thing for a lot of people, but
it shouldn't be a normal.
It shouldn't be a normal thing. I agree with that. Yeah,
it should not be like if we go to war. And then you hear like the Iraq War, and you hear like we've taken Baghdad or whatever. You know, my first thought is a bunch of people just died.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first thought. I'm not saying I'm a better person for thinking that, but I, for whatever reason,
I think that's the healthier way to
feel
think,
like this immediate like, oh well, I don't want. I would prefer that. Like, listen, I believe there are justifiable there are moments where violence is justified. Like, I think that's, we have to accept that as human beings, right? And even coordinated violence can be justified, right? Like, I think, you know, had we had better coordinated violence as Hitler was rising to power, I hate to keep talking about Hitler, but I've been listening to this book all about the rise of Hitler's, you know, the Berlin pre, you know, full on world war. And, you know, it's called In the Garden of Beasts, which is a pretty amazing book, and I recommend it to everybody and anybody. But anyhow, it's, you know, it's just like, had there been coordinated violence from like America earlier, we would not have lost so many lives because Hitler was actually a monster. But like, you know, so I'm not like anti-war in like in totality. But in general, like, to celebrate it is a weird notion, you know. To celebrate it ending actually makes a lot of sense to me, right? Mm-hmm. But to celebrate like the act of it is unusual, right? And maybe to a degree, the killing Osama bin Laden for a lot of people was a catharsis. Like, this thing that happened now has come to some conclusion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You can get a peace from
and
it.
Yet,
like,
and
I
yet,
lost family members, now I'm at peace.
And yet the reality is it didn't conclude anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's death penalty stuff we're getting into. But we do have to wrap.
We do have to wrap. And sorry, that was a ramble. Any final thoughts? We went around the world here. We've been everywhere. We're now in Hitler and terrorism territory. Anything that we didn't discuss that you felt we should have talked about?
No. I mean, this was great. I feel like any comment that I make after thinking about what we've been talking about is just going to like send us into another digression. So probably better to just
good man.
Digressions are the lifeblood of this podcast. So on the one hand, I'm curious, but then I think for the sake of all of our days, for our time, that we should not do any more digressions. Anyhow, thank you so much for doing this. This is great. You got to come back. I mean, obviously, I expect you'll be writing some more stuff for us. I don't know if you have anything in the pipeline right now.
Nothing at the moment, but certainly.
Oh, and one quick thing before we go. We've been doing this thing at the end of every show, which is like, you know, because like typically the conversation trends towards a
existential crisis.
Yeah, like dark. I mean, a lot of shit we've been talking about is pretty dark. So we've been doing this thing where it's like stuff that you're
that you like.
Like things on the internet that you like, or something that you like, a hobby that you've taken up recently, or like something. So Ryan can start.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to participate in this if there's literally nothing you can think of that you're like currently into or like loving, or you saw a tweet that you thought was hilarious or whatever. But like Ryan will start, then I'll do one, and then if you want, you feel free to join.
Sure.
But it's just something like basically at the end of a very, you know, at the end of like literally we're talking about Hitler and the killing of Osama bin Laden. We're going to just like make it lighthearted and happy at the end of this. All right, Ryan, go ahead.
So I talked about this on Ryan's show this weekend, which you can watch at twitch.tv/Ryan Show
pitch.
Plug.
Ryan Show on twitch.tv.
Yes. I talked about this a little bit, and the audio worked this week, so it was great. But my fiance, we had to cancel a big vacation that he got me for my birthday because a family member needed the money for an emergency, which we were happy to help, but it was very sad because we have never really been on a vacation. So he planned like a staycation in New York. We live in not a nice part of New York. We stayed in a really nice part of New York, and we went to the movies, and we went to the park, and we did all this stuff that we'd never do, and I would really encourage anybody out there who is struggling, even if you don't have a ton of money, stay with a friend. Just get out of your little circuit that you live in. The little, like, I take the train here, I come back. I come to this outline office 5 times a week, then I go home and I go to the same 8 websites and I check Twitter. Put that stuff away. Spend 24 hours doing something, see a movie you wouldn't have seen, take the time to read a book you wouldn't have read, stay at a friend's. It gave me perspective and it changed my mood. If only for this week, it was a different week, and we need that stuff more than ever, and it cost us not that much money. So I would encourage you to do something different this week.
Wow.
And see Crazy Rich Asians, which is part of what we did in our staycation, and
wow,
it was the best movie I've ever seen.
Really?
It's so good.
Is it that good?
It was just refreshing to watch something that was like romantic comedy, well done, everybody operating on all cylinders, great soundtrack.
We have a great piece on the site about that Jeremy Gordon wrote. I recommend you read it.
I did.
Okay, good. Okay, I have 3 things, I think. 2 of them are music. One of them is like a Twitter thing. These are really dumb. One is a friend of mine was like, I feel really stupid. I use Spotify, and a friend of mine was like, oh, I'm listening to something radio. I'm like, what's that? And it's like, oh, there's this thing where, like, if you're listening to a song or an album or whatever, you can be like, listen to the radio station for this. And then it's like music that is like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
I've never used the function. I mean, maybe I've used it
like Pandora.
Yeah, I've maybe used it in by accident.
Yeah, no, it's the
best.
But
I never really knew what it was for. And I'm constantly on Spotify. I'm like, I've already listened to everything. Like, I got it. And the Discovery thing, Discover or whatever, it's like, okay, but it's not. So I started, mm-hmm. I've started using that feature more. And it's like, it's not bad.
It's good at matching mood.
Yeah, like, yeah, here's what I discovered. If you listen to the Troy Sivan dance, what is the song called? Dance to This?
Dance to This.
If you listen to the Dance to This station, most of them are clunkers. Whatever they think, whatever genre Dance to This, Spotify thinks it's
Spotify's in. Spotify's not, doesn't really know how to parse chill pop.
It's like clunkers. Okay, but so there's that. Second, I have been, every so often I'll like get obsessively into listening to a song over and over again. Recently it was Ghost Town by Adam Lambert, which I'm sure I've talked mm-hmm. about. Which I still will listen to whenever, where it's usually like a bad pop song. I've been listening to the song. So Katy Perry's last record was kind of a dud. There's a song called Hey, Hey, Hey on it,
mm-hmm.
which is written by Sia and Max Martin, of course. It's really good. It's stupid. The lyrics are really stupid in some parts.
Yeah, it's written by Sia and
Max
Martin.
The song is really good.
Yeah.
And I think it's like kind of a sleeper from that record that it's just the wrong time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my – so my and then my third thing is there's this just this tweet, which is like kind of a – I mean, Twitter's bad for the most part, but there's a tweet of like on this – from the set of John Wick 3.
Have you
seen it?
No.
Somebody tweeted like John Wick 3 is already the best movie ever made. It's a picture of Keanu Reeves in the role of John Wick riding a horse next to a guy on a motorcycle.
Oh, I saw this.
Like holding a gun. It looks like maybe he's been there's like wires attached to Keanu Reeves, so maybe he's like he's like leapt onto the horse or something. He's about to shoot a guy on a motorcycle. There's just so much going on.
Welcome to the Wick cast.
Anyhow, so those are amazing. All right. Oh, and I don't know if this has given you a chance to really think about things that you're that you're loving or liking. But
yeah,
Here's your opportunity.
Well, I live in rural Western Massachusetts, so it's pretty cool that the weather has started to die down a little bit. It means that I can go out walking with my dog a lot more, which is something that I really like to do. It clears my mind.
What is your dog's name?
Freya. Yep, she's a good girl.
What kind of dog is that?
She's a mutt. My wife got her before we met. She's like hound pit mix. She has like the dog bird kind of thing going on a little bit. She's really pretty.
All right. Well, you have to send some pics. Maybe we'll put a picture in the.
I will. Post. I have millions of pics of her. Definitely. And then the other thing is that I'm actually on Cape Cod at the moment, and I've actually been able to go swimming 3 days in a row, which has never happened to me out here before. So definitely been enjoying that.
I love swimming. I love being in the water. Mm-hmm. This has been a really shitty August. It's been raining, so there's been very few swimming opportunities.
Yeah, right. Like these 3 days, it was amazing. Like these 3 days, like the only 3 days of like heat, and we were out here, so.
Yeah, I was traveling for all of the hot days so far, so I've not had any chance to do anything that was fun. But all right, cool. That's great. Oh, and thank you so much for doing this. This was an extremely good conversation, we'll have.
Yeah, excellent. Soon. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, that is our show for this week. We'll be back next week with more tomorrow. And as always, I wish you and your family the very best, though I understand that your family has just logged on and has become part of the resistance.